Things got a little spicy in sports this weekend. As usual, a few mighty teams fell, as did a few coaches exiting stage right. And NASCAR might have a new king. Or so that's what I heard in my house this weekend, according to my husband, Bill.
I love how it all gets filtered through him.
It does, you know, for the rest of the world. He's the former disembodied voice from ESPN's Around the Horn. To me, my darling husband. Hi, Bill.
Hello, darling wife. How are you?
I'm doing well. So I know you were just, you were primed, you were ready for
this great sports weekend.
Michigan-Ohio State. It was a weekend of rivalries. So you have
Michigan-Ohio
State.
Yep.
The New York Times headline says, Ohio State heads into BCS and Michigan into the unknown.
Yeah.
Could you explain that for us who don't follow this so closely?
Well, first things first, Ohio State to the BCS. The BCS is the kind of the organizing body which decides which college football team will be the champion of all college football teams, and they rank them using computers and using human judgment, you know, polls. If you are in the top eight, then you get to play in one of the fabulous BCS bowl games. And by beating Michigan, which Ohio State did 14-3 at Michigan, Ohio State got back into the top tier of the BCS. So that's the first part of that headline. But
Michigan into the unknown? I thought Michigan, I mean, Michigan, one of the powerhouses.
Well,
I even know that.
Yeah, and you know it well. But having lost to Ohio State, they have now lost six of the last seven annual meetings with Ohio State, which is just unacceptable to people in Michigan. You know, people at University of Michigan, very good school, but it's one of the very good schools in the country where if the football team is not the best, they grow very impatient. And so now that they've lost, particularly if they lose to Ohio State, so they've lost to Ohio State now six times out of seven, and that is going to cause this morning at 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific, their coach of 13 years, an old, excellent, crusty Midwestern guy called Lloyd Carr, to step aside under pressure, because had he beat Ohio State, he might have saved his job. But at Michigan, and also vice versa at Ohio State, if you can't beat that team, that rival team, consistently, they got no time for you.
So he leaves in disgrace?
Well, he leaves under heavy pressure. It's hard to say he leaves in disgrace, because he was the coach when they won the national championship in 1997.
Counts for something.
It's got it.
Yeah, it counts for quite a bit. But
that was 10 years ago.
Well, that's it. You know, the thing about sports, which probably isn't very good, is it's a culture of immediate gratification. And the question is always, what have you done for me lately? I wouldn't say he leaves in disgrace, but it feels as if a majority of Michigan fans have grown impatient with Michigan's inability to not just be very good, which, by the way, they're very good. They won eight games and only lost four. That's very good by most people's standards. But at Michigan, you have to be 10-2 or 11-1, and you have to be in the race for the national championship, and they just weren't. So I wouldn't say in disgrace, but certainly everybody's lost patience, and they want excellence, and they want it now.
The rivalry, which you watched closely,
yes,
sat on the couch Saturday around noon,
mm-hmm.
Harvard versus Yale.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sing the song.
What happened? Can you tell me what happened, Allison?
I believe Harvard won that game,
yes,
or so I've been
told. Yes, they did. You see, they
See, wait, okay, Bill went to Harvard.
Yeah, sorry. I apologize to all your listeners.
Well, we could tell your voice went up three octaves.
Well,
sing the Harvard fight song, which I had to listen to.
Come on, sing it for
10,
us.
10,000 men of Harvard want victory today, for they know
I shouldn't have asked. I should not have started him. How long will he go with this?
On and on.
He'll go all day long with this.
And when the game ends,
can we get him to start talking again?
10,000 men of Harvard gain victory today. And we did.
You just frightened the cat and the neighbors.
Sorry.
So why was that such a big deal game?
Well, it wasn't. Who really cares? I mean, it's Harvard and it's Ivy League football. But Yale and Harvard, of course, it's a big game. It's the game, according to them. And Yale was undefeated and untied, unblemished, and they hadn't been unblemished in 46 years. So the contest was for the coveted Ivy League title,
right.
Coveted by very few, but coveted by those. And Harvard spoiled Yale's, not only the Ivy title, but they spoiled Yale's undefeated season. So you know, it's not too important, but it's always fun to beat Yale, congratulate them on their superior undergraduate education, and head back to Cambridge and, you know, live it up.
I know the game you really cared about, though, truthfully, was the Missouri-Kansas game. That was the one you were on fire about.
Well, Missouri and Kansas are way up there in the rankings. This morning, Kansas is number 2 in the whole country in the BCS. Missouri is number 4. Which is like if Kucinich was 2 and Gravel was 4. This never happens. You would never predict this in all your life. And I grew up in St. Louis, and so I am really actually, I care much more for Missouri than for Harvard when it comes to football.
Kansas, you mean? Oh, Harvard, I get you saying.
Take it easy.
Sorry.
Don't ever say that again. Anyway, Missouri is heading to Kansas City this Saturday to play Kansas in a game called the Border War, which first, the Missouri-Kansas rivalry dates to about 1850 when some slave owners in Missouri crossed the border into Kansas and shot up some abolitionists, and it was on, and now they just play a football game instead of shooting guns. Anyway, Missouri had to beat Kansas State in the other Manhattan, Kansas, and Kansas had to beat Iowa State in order to ensure that this would be such a huge game this coming Saturday, and it is. Here it comes. Missouri and Kansas, for the first time ever, maybe, for the first time since 1850, it's a meaningful game.
All right, so I know what you'll be doing next Saturday.
Loving you.
Thank you. NASCAR. What happened to NASCAR? I didn't watch it all. I can't even prompt you on this. I think I went to bed.
Well, NASCAR, the stock car races, you know, it's a season. The races, even though they're individual races and there's a winner each week, they accumulate points. And at the end of the season, there's a champion like in any other sport. And yesterday was the last race of the NASCAR season. And a guy called Jimmy Johnson, who's a very handsome guy from California, very slick, he won the championship for the second straight year. So he has sort of emerged as this dominant guy. But what's interesting about it to me, NASCAR's television ratings, which had been skyrocketing through the 1990s and into the 2000s, have now ebbed a little bit. And so everybody's wondering, why is this happening? And I think it has to do with the fact, and I love NASCAR, that NASCAR has always been a sort of the world's most excellent and achieved, you know, garage guys, grease monkeys. And that was its appeal. It's moonshine. Its roots are in moonshine running. Well, Jimmy Johnson is like this model, handsome Californian without a southern accent. And it has become a little bit sterile as a result. When I used to watch NASCAR, it was guys named Buddy, Dale, like that, and they talked like they were from North Carolina because they were, and it was kind of local yokels writ large. And now it's really good-looking guys who are really slick and sell lots of products and stuff. So the most interesting thing to me about the NASCAR deal is that it's kind of been taken away from its roots and become more mainstream, and I'm not sure that's to the benefit of the sport. That's what I'd say about that, Allison.
All right, in just about a minute.
Mm-hmm.
This story caught Robert by surprise. That yes. A-Rod,
yeah,
love it,
sought Warren Buffett's advice in trying to figure out his deal with the Yankees.
And he said, invest in Coca-Cola.
He's just like me and you, Robert. He's just a guy with $275 million and Warren Buffett's cell phone number. Yeah, well, the short thing is, Alex Rodriguez had a humongous contract, and he's a brilliant player who is perceived to choke in the clutch. That's the perception. He's had a rocky run in New York personally, even though statistically he's been brilliant. He opts out of his contract during the World Series in order to become a free agent. The Yankees say, well, if you're going to opt out of your contract, we're not going to be in the bidding. Good luck to you. Good night. So he was going to go try to get $30 million a year.
You have 30 seconds.
Which is unprecedented. Over the week, he got cold feet. I think no one wanted to give him 30. He misjudged the market.
Yeah.
So over the weekend, apparently, he calls Warren Buffett and says, what should I do? And Warren Buffett says, you dummy. What are you doing? The team with the most money is the Yankees. They're the ones that will re-sign you. So call them up, eat some humble pie, get somebody in there to negotiate a piece, and then sign with the Yankees. So a friend of Alex Rodriguez's at Goldman Sachs, you know all ballplayers are friends with guys at Goldman Sachs now, calls the Yankees and says, can we broker a deal? Hat in hand, back goes A-Rod to the Yankees, and the Yankees fill that hat with about $280 million for his humility. It's amazing.
It's the same. Bill Wolf, the Bryant Park Project's Monday morning quarterback. I'll talk to you later. Thank you.
I can't wait. Thanks, guys.
Coming up, the authors of Shooting War, a new graphic novel about life in the future. Stay with us on the BPP.